number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Hey, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue through the night tonight. I read a really good article today. It's going to come out in Sports Illustrated. It is the cover story of this week's Sports Illustrated, and it is on Tiger Woods. But I had kind of a love-hate relationship with this article, because the article, it's Alan Supnek. It's really good. It's one of those articles that tells a lot of stories about Tiger's career and basically life. They had stories from when he was a junior golfer. Guys were telling stories of this championship and this PGA event and this. His caddy said this and his coach said that, and Tiger was this and Tiger was that, and all of these little anecdotes on Tiger Woods. And the basic idea behind it is, what happened to Tiger Woods? It's a perplexing question. There's a lot of things that are part of it. It's not necessarily just injuries. There's a lot of stuff going on. He's had a very unique and kind of bizarre rise and fall. We don't usually see that in sports. We don't see a guy fall off a cliff who achieved complete greatness and then just sort of disappear. But Tiger did that. He was the greatest, one of the greatest athletes in our country. And then, boom, it was over, and it was over quick, and he never got it back, and he's been a mess. But here's where I had the love-hate relationship. The article is well-written. It is well-researched. It is everything you want in that kind of story. It's brilliant. But the larger aspect of the story, on the cover of Sports Illustrated, as we kind of roll into Masters Week, do we still have an unhealthy obsession with Tiger Woods? Or is it right for us to continue to sort of live in the cloud of Tiger Woods and his accomplishments and what really happened to him? I look at the state of golf right now as, again, it's Masters Week next week, and it is becoming a young man's game. For better or worse, you can say everything you want about it in terms of the youth is taking over and it doesn't last, and we don't know if these kids are going to end up being great. All those things are true. But right now, it's Jordan Spieth, it's Jason Day, it's Rory McIlroy, it's Patrick Reed occasionally, it's Ricky Fowler, and it's healthy. The sport is healthy. It doesn't have a dominating golfer. It has a couple of dominating golfers. Jordan Spieth just lost his number one ranking to Jason Day, who's the hottest golfer on tour right now. But Rory McIlroy is playing really well. We're going to go into the Masters, where the youth movement of the sport is taking over. But yet, we find ourselves still obsessed as to why a 40-year-old golfer isn't at the top of his game. Is that healthy as a sporting society? We've accepted that there are times in athletes' lives where we shouldn't expect anything from them anymore. We saw Peyton Manning a couple of years ago throw 53 touchdown passes. Then a couple of years later, he's out of the NFL and retired, and we're all saying good for you. We're actually kind of glad. Remember the thought of him possibly playing for the St. Louis Rams? Now, I know football players and golfers don't have the same timeline. Phil Mickelson's going to turn 46. He can still win tournaments. He can still play top-of-the-line golf. Tiger is going into his 40s, and it doesn't look like he's going to be coming back anytime soon. And I've asked this question for years and years and years. As Tiger Woods was disappearing, and this was before his emergence, because I think it was only a couple years ago, he won a whole bunch of tournaments. But I said, if he doesn't win another major, will we say he still was one of the greatest golfers of all time, or the greatest golfer of all time? Or will we say, wow, that was really disappointing? He came so close and then disappeared. Tiger Woods has not won a major since June of 2008. It is it is likely that Barack Obama will have completed two terms of the presidency in a span of never calling Tiger Woods to wish him congratulations on winning a major. That's how long it's been. And the answer to the what happened to Tiger is complex. It is injuries. It is swing change. It is fall from grace. It is different attitude. It is the emergence of better golfers that have come onto the scene and taken what he established and refined it. Meaning, yeah, they're shooting the score as the Tiger shot or close to it. This is a really complex problem, and I loved reading the article. I absolutely loved it. It is really well written. And again, if you get Sports Illustrated or if you don't, go online and read it, it's really fascinating. And the anecdotes were great. I mean, they had guys talking about what he was like when I think John Cook was telling a story in one of the – I think it was John Cook who said, you know, I'm out there on the range practicing, and here comes Tiger. He just ran 8 miles. He's got no shirt on. He's sweating. And then he grabs my 2-iron, and he hits these missiles, and he's hitting better shots than I was at the range, and I'm thinking, how do I beat this? Tiger would walk to the range. Guys would stop practicing because they saw him walking, and just him walking was enough to get them understanding that everyone was playing for second. That's the kind of level he was at. And then it just was gone. Wai Yang beat him on a Sunday at the PGA Championship in 2009. It was the closest he came. Remember last year when at the Masters, we were wondering if that short game was going to be a disaster, because it had been a disaster at Phoenix. It had been a disaster at Torrey Pines. But it wasn't. And he played pretty well. Not great, but pretty well. But then the U.S. Open, ugh. British Open, missed the cut. PGA, not, same thing. He just had a year where we watched him shoot an 85 at Memorial. It was terrible. Where did he go? And are we too obsessed? And because of that, can we enjoy, if you're a golf fan, can you just let it go and enjoy exactly what we're seeing out of the young guys? Because I love what we're seeing out of golf. This is really cool. There's some good rivalries. There's good battles. Guys are really testing each other. You know, whether it's Jordan Spieth and Jason Day in the final round of the PGA Championship, Rory McIlroy being just a threat every time. Remember, he wasn't going to be at the British Open, and we were all like, oh, man. It's a good time in golf right now. It's a great time in golf right now, and it doesn't include Tiger Woods at all. Is Tiger Woods a main ingredient into a stew that tastes delicious, or is he the ingredient that you kind of add that you kind of wish you didn't? Like, oh, I really think this would be really some good coriander. Oh, wait a minute. That throws everything off. Because I don't want to obsess with Tiger Woods and his return. It'll happen when it happens. And I got to be honest with you, I think when it happens, I'm not going to be happy about it. Because I don't think he's going to play very well at all. 800-777-2907. 800-777-2907. Adam, tonight I took my kids out. I live in a small town outside Nashville, and we got a Bojangles restaurant. And I took my kids to the grand opening, and it was packed. Absolutely packed. This town, my town is nuts for grand openings. It was delicious. I used to go to Bojangles when I was in South Carolina, and I loved it. And I couldn't wait to take my kids. They were like, it's a chicken place. But I was reminiscing of my college days. But the funny thing happened. While we were in line waiting to order, the lady yells that the credit card machine crashed, and they were only accepting cash, and everybody got out of line. Nobody carries cash anymore.
No, I don't.
I had to go to the bank too. There was a bank across the street. We all ran over to the ATM. I had to pay the $3 service charge because I wasn't using my own bank. And I got my money, and I went back and got the chicken, dirty rice, mashed potatoes, and chicken and biscuit.
I mean,
and sweet tea that would make you hurt your teeth.
I just wanted some chicken.
Oh, chicken was great. Chicken was spicy. It was good. It was delicious.
Now you're making me hungry.
I know. Well, my wife, I told my wife on the phone, I said, oh, she goes, what are you doing for dinner? I go, Bojangles opened up. I said, I took them. This is a line. There was, I don't, and people are lazy, by the way, because it was a longer line for the drive-thru than there was for the inside the restaurant. I wanted to yell to people, get out of your car. You're going to wait 20 minutes in the drive-thru line because you don't want to get out of your car. Get out of your car. All right, coming up next, People versus O.J. Simpson recap. We do this every week. Oh, we don't have very much to do because I think they're coming down to the finale of the whole thing. Coming up next, the Furman tapes. Oh, this was a good episode. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio, taking you through the night. We'll get to our review of The People versus O.J. Simpson. It's one of my favorite shows on TV. I'm sad it's coming to an end. I wonder how the verdict is going to go down.
Yeah, I know. I've been on pins and needles for weeks.
Pins and needles. I thought it was a really good episode. It's been a good episode, but I thought this was really... I've been waiting to see how they handled the behind-the-scenes stuff on the Furman tapes. Before we do that, I want to give a shout-out to Jeanette, who... hit me up on Twitter last night, because remember yesterday we were talking about the Jim Nance story and the burnt toast, how he carries a picture of burnt toast in his wallet. And then you asked if I had any sort of food issues like that. And I said, no, but I don't like onions. They made this big deal about not liking onions. And then she sent me a thing on Twitter. She said, not liking onions is perfectly acceptable. Everyone is different. And I wanted to say thanks, Jeanette. Thank you so much. It made me feel good because I feel weird not liking onions. And I think it's because everybody seems to like onions around me. Oh, man, I love peppers and onions. I'm Italian. I don't like peppers and onions. I don't like peppers or onions. I remember my grandmother in Brooklyn used to make a sauce, a Sicilian sauce, a delicious Sicilian sauce. And it had peppers and onions in it. And she'd have to make a special, special gravy for me because I didn't like that stuff. I might be the only Italian that doesn't like peppers and onions. My dad would eat peppers and onions every meal if he could. He loves it. Sausage and peppers and onions and stuff. I don't. So thank you, Jeanette, for making me feel good. Steven on Twitter, with the CTE talk in the NFL and now in NASCAR. Oh, yeah, I saw Dale Earnhardt Jr. wants to donate his brain when he passes. Why do you think it's not talked about in the NHL, even with a lawsuit last year? It's a good question. I don't follow the NHL that much. Is CTE a big NHL discussion? I mean, you like hockey.
Yeah, it's starting to become more prevalent, but it's not widely talked about like the NFL or anything like that.
I remember Eric Lindros. Remember that? Remember him? He had a ton of concussions in his day. I think it should be talked about all over. If you're in a sport that you get concussions, you should be in the conversation. It's not just an NFL thing. NASCAR drivers suffer it. NHL drivers suffer it. I mean, my God, remember last year they're in the NBA playoffs. We were all worried about Steph Curry, who landed smack on his head in the Western Conference Finals. So, yeah, no, CTE and concussions are a big deal. I think with CTE, the NFL, this is just my thought on CTE real quick. I think CTE and the NFL are related because we had some major suicides, and then when examining those brains, we discovered CTE. I don't know any big CTE discoveries in NASCAR because you can only discover them when they're dead. You know, it's not like, you know, Jeff Gordon can go walk in and say, after 20 years of racing, do I have CTE? And they find out he has CTE. They can't find that out until you pass. So we had, you know, Dave Durison died. We had Junior Seau die. We had Mike Webster. We had a number of NFL athletes die young. And when examining their brains, discovered CTE. So there's a connection. That doesn't mean that NASCAR drivers won't get that or NHL hockey players won't get that. It just seems like when we looked at dead football players and found CTE, there was a connection. And that's where I'm going with that. It's the best answer I can give you, Steven. Best answer I can give you. All right. People versus O.J. Simpson. Now, did you have a chance to see it because your cable was out?
Yes, I saw it.
You did see it.
Yes.
All right. Here's my issue. I was a young radio guy during the whole O.J. Simpson trial, but I got to be honest with you. I didn't watch it every day when I was younger. I wasn't glued to my television. I kind of listened to the news on the periphery. Every morning, I worked overnights at this news talk station, and one of my jobs was I was part of the sports department and putting the sports together, and my boss would come in and we'd talk about cuts and all that stuff. But the other thing I had to do was I had to download and card up a couple of features, and one of the things I had to do every day was card up, edit, and cut up a three-minute ABC News OJ feature. It came down every single day. And we would air it every single day. We'd play it once an hour on the news. And I would listen to that, and I'd get caught up on my OJ news of the day, the trial. And when it got to the Furman tapes, they were a really big deal, but I really couldn't remember, outside of him using the N-word over and over again, how they emerged and why they emerged and why they were relevant to the case. Because it doesn't seem like a guy who's making these, you know, making this conversation, he was claiming he was reading a script back then, how they kind of came into the case in the public view. And I thought the show did a really good job of laying out exactly what both sides wanted out of the Furman tapes. And I love the scene in North Carolina where Johnny Cochran was doing the Johnny Cochran stuff to try to get the transcripts of the tapes released. And F. Lee Bailey had to remind them that they were in North Carolina and that wasn't going to fly. And so F. Lee Bailey went on to praise all the judges about North Carolina, how great North Carolina was. And then they got the transcripts. But the thing that was really, really, really well done was the relationship between Judge Ito and his wife, who's a police officer, and how Furman was disparaging Judge Ito's wife and what he was going through. I also think the scene with John Travolta as Bob Shapiro. Remember when he was flipping out on Johnny Cochran was ready to burn the city down over this.
Yes, that was a great scene.
Great scene. And John Travolta is yelling at, he's Bob Shapiro. He is yelling at Johnny Cochran that he is ready to just take this to the next place that it can't go. The city was, remember at the time, the city had just recovered from the Rodney King riots.
Right, yep.
And they were about ready to set the city on fire again over these tapes. This is, again, for people who don't remember this at all, who just hear, this is history to them and not something that they're reliving. This has to be the strangest, most ridiculous court case in the history of mankind. And it really was. It was really nuts. Well, Marcia Clark and Chris Darden apparently made up on the show, although Darden had his say about why he was on the panel. And then there was that scene. I kind of had to rewatch this scene again. They were talking about the tapes, whether or not they were going to be admissible or not, and Darden loses it on Johnny Cochran in closed court, and Judge Ito was going to find him in contempt, and Darden looked like he was just going to break.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And Marcia Clark was going to break, and they were all the pressure, and they were trying to figure out whether or not they wanted a mistrial, and the defense obviously didn't want a mistrial, and I think the prosecution wanted one because they had screwed up on the glove. But boy, Bob Kardashian is not having a good time on this jury.
No.
I mean, on this case.
Yeah, he's just...
He wants out of this now. He can't wait to be done with this. And he's just not buying it.
And David Schwimmer just looks, he looks so, I don't know, he can do it so well. And he did it a lot on Friends. Where
he did
just
it,
looks
right.
Sad. And he just plays it so well.
He has that pathetic look about him, that really sad, pathetic look about him. He is playing this to perfection. Because again, Robert Kardashian is the only guy, when the verdict is announced, if you watch it, watch the real verdict, that looks like, oh my God, what have we done? We just got a double murderer free. Everyone else is high-fiving each other, patting OJ on the back. All right, we won. We got the... And Bob Kardashian's the only one going, oh my God. And Schwimmer is playing that reaction in every scene in this. It is season finale next week. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue through the night tonight. Excuse me. There, that's better. Isn't it always good when a radio host has to take a drink as he goes on, goes right back on the air? Is it the worst? Shouldn't I be taking care of that stuff before? Well, it just happens. 800-777-2907 is the number if you want to join us tonight. We're talking a lot of D'Angelo Russell. I'm still blown away by it. What a dumb move that was. Taping Nick Young, confessing to an affair. One of the cardinal rules of sports locker room talk. I mean, it's so immature. It does make me wonder, if you're a general manager, how do you measure maturity in the draft picks that you're taking? How do you evaluate maturity versus talent? Because there are immature guys that are going to do dumb things, but they're incredibly talented. And they'd be the right pick. They'd be the right take. But then at the same time, you could be dealing with stuff like this where you could rip a locker room apart. There's kind of a larger context here. Because we were talking about this yesterday with, okay, there's a lot of young 19-year-old guys in the draft, but there's also a couple of really, really good 22-year-olds that are in the draft. And if you're a general manager and you had a chance to polish a 19-year-old, a guy that you could get ready for superstardom, you could get a couple of years where he's learning the NBA, learning the schedule, learning the arenas, learning how to pace himself, learning his role, all of those things, and then get a really, really good 21-year-old that's league polished. Or do you take a 22-year-old that's probably got a lot more maturity than some 19-year-old kid who likes to film people while they're not watching, but yet you're sacrificing those development years? Meaning you're getting a guy 3 years older than some of the guys that are coming in. I think maturity is a big deal, and I think there's a way to measure it. That's one thing they say about Ben Simmons, is Ben Simmons really is immature beyond his years. Whether or not that translates to him being a star, I don't know. But he's not filled with sort of a level of immaturity that D'Angelo Russell is at least exhibiting. I mean, Byron Scott said he's 19 going on 14. Because of the silliness of this. And boy, the Lakers really need this. They're going to close out the season celebrating one of the greatest basketball players the league has ever seen. That should be everything. Kobe Bryant retiring to Laker management is a gift from heaven. It does a number of things. It allows you to have a season that should have been drama-free. Lose 60 games, so what? It's Kobe's year. Young talent having problems with the coach, so what? Kobe's leaving. Talent not developing right, so what? Kobe's leaving. It's a gift from heaven, for crying out loud. Management's not doing enough in free agency at the trade deadline, so what? Kobe's leaving. Hey, it's a perfect setup for a lousy season. Every day, everywhere they go, the Lakers, every game they're on the road, they're sold out. They're sold out at home as everybody does the Kobe tour. I mean, my God, you could go a whole 82 games without one second of drama, because all you need to do is celebrate the life of Kobe Bryant, for crying out loud. It's a gift, and the Lakers blew it. How many non-Kobe stories have we dealt with the Lakers this year? Oh, D'Angelo Russell's not getting quality playing time. Byron Scott doesn't trust him in clutch situations. Now we've got D'Angelo Russell filming a teammate admitting to having an affair, and that got leaked, and now everybody hates each other. Kobe was perfect. And now if you're Kobe Bryant, are you going to get involved in this? You've got, what, 10 games left before you're done? Before you can walk away and live the life of being a celebrated athlete in Los Angeles who delivered rings, who's never going to pay him for a meal, is never going to want for anything, is going to have the adulation of everybody around him, and every celebrity in Los Angeles that ever attended a Laker game will forever be telling Kobe how awesome he is. That's a life Kobe's going to have going forward. He's a couple of games away from not having to deal with all of this mess. The Lakers still find themselves in controversy land. My God, it makes me laugh. But at the same time, I feel bad for D'Angelo Russell because he is a kid. And I'm not one of those guys that throws the baby out with the bathwater, no pun intended. He is a baby. But I don't think this is the end of his career. I don't think this is a career killer. But it's a very, very difficult climb back. This isn't going to be easy. And here's the deal. This is an issue where people don't even have to like Nick Young to side with him. There's going to be players in this league that may not like Nick Young, and it doesn't matter because the overall issue is, my God, man, that's our sanctuary. That's where we go to say this kind of stuff. This is what we talk about. We share it amongst our teammates, and we're not supposed to tell anybody. That's the world they live in. I mean, it's incredible how this franchise has fallen. And it's sad, too, because I do think this league needs a couple of iconic teams to be good, and I do think the Lakers are one of them. I think the NBA is better when the Lakers are good. They don't have to be great. They don't have to be championship great. They just have to be good. And they're not. They're a lousy, lousy basketball team that's now fighting with one guy. And the guy that's supposed to be the cornerstone of the rebuild process, we don't even know if he should actually be a Laker right now. This was such a mess. Silly. Look at the Celtics, for example. Look at the Celtics, Knicks, and Lakers. The Celtics had a plan to rebuild, to dump, burn it down, and rebuild. And they are doing that. The Knicks are living in the past constantly, dragged Phil Jackson into New York, and still don't know who they are, what they want to be. And Carmelo Anthony is talking about wanting to be on the Olympic team because he doesn't know what winning feels like anymore. This is a guy who won a national championship while he was with the Syracuse Orange in the 1 year he was there. And when he got to Denver, he turned a franchise that had not been in the playoffs for 9 straight years and got him to the playoffs every single year he was there. And now he's on a lousy Knicks team. And the Lakers are a mess. If you're Adam Silver, it's great to have the story of the Golden State Warriors. It's great to have Oklahoma City and Russell Westbrook pouring in triple-doubles every other night. It's great when you have teams that are starting to look and feel good and starting to develop and maybe doing something, maybe not great special. Look what's going on in Cleveland and all. But again, your iconic franchises, rebuilding, don't know what winning's like, fighting amongst themselves because a guy admitted to an affair that was secretly taped by a 19-year-old rookie who doesn't understand how these stuff works. I mean, slap my head. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And where would you be if you were Kobe? Where would a leader on this team be in this situation? Where would a guy who actually cared about what this means to the franchise, how would he handle this? How would he resolve this? How would he make this something that they could overcome? I have no idea. And to be honest with you, I don't blame him one bit. Kobe Bryant, if he got in the middle of this, come on. He's got other things to do. He's closing out a 20-year career, and he's not going to close out the 20-year career resolving this dispute. No, D'Angelo Russell, you're on your own. You're on your own. All right, 800-777-2907 is the number, 800-777-2907. All right, I promised I would get to this, and I got to revisit this story. We talked about Duncan Keith using his stick as a weapon. The NHL could probably and should keep him out for some games. Playoffs, how far into the postseason would they suspend a guy who hacked with a stick just before the playoffs start? Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, glad you've been with us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. We were talking about this earlier tonight about Chicago Blackhawks star Duncan Keith smacked a Minnesota Wild player, Charlie Coyle, in the face with his stick. So the NHL is going to come down with a suspension. Now, if you are the NHL, I got to look this up because the Blackhawks probably have only like 5 games left in the season. I think it's where we're at right now. It's supposed to be wrapping up any day now. Blackhawks have 5 games left before the playoffs. Now, let's say you want to suspend, if you're the league and you want to set a good suspension on this, and you want to make it 10 games, how would you evaluate the playoff games if you're the NHL? Would you punish the organization? Because, heck, the playoffs, I mean, they're real. I mean, you could lose a guy for a couple of games. Just a couple of games in a series could turn a series. Or do you say, no, you know what? A season ender in Columbus is just as valuable as game 7 of an NHL playoff series. And we're not differentiating. And we're going to suspend 10 games is 10 games. And that's it. Doesn't matter. I kind of tell you this. I would like to see the NHL or any league to have a little bit of authority here when a guy does something like that. But at the same time, that could destroy a season really quick. Does the NFL do this? Does the NFL say, oh, playoff game and a regular season game are the same thing? I think they do. If you do something in week 17 and your team is on the way to the playoffs and you get suspended for something that should be 2 playoff games, I think you're sitting out 2 playoff games. Major League Baseball, same thing, I think. But if you're Duncan Keith, don't you appeal immediately so you can at least play? I would think that that's what you would do.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll appeal.
So you got to appeal. So, and then see where this goes. What would it satisfy people if he was suspended for the final 5 games of the regular season and the first 5 games of the start of next season, but could play in the playoffs? That's a very, very hard pill to swallow for a lot of people.
Yeah, it is.
Because that's almost like, oh, wow, great. So when they need him the most, he can play. When they don't really need him the most, he sits out. I remember, listen, I covered the Colorado Avalanche in 2004 when Steve Moore got hit by Todd Bertuzzi. And I remember the array of penalties that people wanted for Todd Bertuzzi. Now, that was obviously a lot worse than this. Coyle skated away. He just got bruised up. But still, I mean, Duncan Keith used his stick as a weapon. But I remember that with Bertuzzi, the Vancouver Canucks were heading to the playoffs, and they wanted the suspension. People wanted the suspension to be, like, forever. Like, they wanted him, like, hey, you get to come back when Moore comes back. And Moore, of course, never came back. But he got suspended for the rest of the season, including the playoffs. And so that was the hammer that Gary Bettman put down, because Bertuzzi just tracked that kid around the rink and then jumped on his back and then, like, broke his neck. And it was just one of the more terrible incidents in NHL history. This is not that. But I think if you're Gary Bettman, you could make it a lot more than what it was if you suspend him, like, for the rest of the year, regardless of where the Blackhawks go. So 5 games plus any games into the playoffs. If they sweep everybody in 4 or every series is 7 games, then you're hammering them home. But I don't think it's going to be that. I think if it's 10 games, do it 5 games regular season, 5 games in the playoffs. And if it's game 6, it's game 6. If it's Blackhawks sweep the first round series, then you're sit out for game 1 of the next series and see where that goes. But I understand when people say, hey, look, playoff games are different. They carry a different weight. 5 games of the playoffs are not 5 games of the regular season. Though I do understand where that argument lies. It'll be interesting to see where Gary Bettman lies. Doesn't he usually screw this kind of stuff up anyway?
Yeah, that's why Gary Bettman always boos him.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, this should make you feel good as we close out this hour. A story out of my hometown of Nashville, Tennessee. It's not really my hometown, it's where I live. A man in Nashville has gone 50 years working for the same company. Yay, he's going to retire today. On Thursday. Yay. He's 77 years old. He's worked for the same company for 50 years. Yay. Here's the kicker. In 50 years, he has never taken a sick day, personal day, or any day off. In 50 years with the company.
Whoa.
Yes. The president of Auto W, I think it's how you pronounce it, or Auto with a T-O-W at the end of it. The president, Lee Harlan, says, quote, he's never missed a day in the history of the company of being sick. Maybe he's taking vacation, but he's never taken a sick day. Ray, the man's name, hold on 1 second, is Ray Holt. Ray has never missed a day in the history of the company. He has never called in sick, never had a family emergency, and never has decided to take a day off from work. The company says 50 years of service equates to more than 14,800 work days. Ray told News 2 that it's not that he hasn't been sick in any of those days. Well, I've been feeling bad a whole lot of times, but I just get up and take off. I love it. Sure do. I love getting up and coming to work. That's the way I was raised. He also joked, and here's where you and I think would agree. He also joked that his wife's honey-do list runs him off every morning.
Yeah.
Can't stay home. I got too many honey-dos, he said.
Makes a lot of sense.
That is so true. You know what my nickname, you know how people have pet nicknames for their wife? Oh, like Honey Bear or Sweetheart or anything. You know what my nickname for my wife is?
What's that?
Saturday Killer. Lori the Saturday Killer. Because when my wife looks around the house on a Saturday, I know my day is dead. Nothing is going down when Lori the Saturday Killer gets rolling. Good job, Ray. Congratulations. Enjoy retirement. 50 years without taking a sick day. God bless you. I may take 10 this year alone. Yahoo Sports Radio.